A couple of weeks ago at South by Southwest in Austin, I reconnected with a previous guest, Isra Nazir, therapist, clinical strategist, and now the author of a new book, Toxic Productivity. We caught up during a lunch break, and during our short conversation, Isra explained the mindset that compels us to chase relentless achievement, often as a means to cope with the challenging emotions such as guilt, shame, and feeling left behind. She also shares her personal journey and why she wrote the book. She looks at how society's views on productivity impact our work, our relationships, parenting, and self-image. We also discuss the emotional side of productivity advice and why it's important to recognise our core values to achieve healthy productivity. Of course, I had to ask her about the impact of AI on the future of work, mental health, and leadership. Isra highlighted both the risks and opportunities that she sees that AI presents, and stress the need for thoughtful guardrails and an intentional use to enhance rather than diminish human value and connection. Makes sense. Whether you're grappling with burnout, feeling pressured to constantly perform, or just curious about navigating productivity in the age of AI, this is a conversation that should offer some thoughtful insights and practical advice. If you want to go further, I'd certainly buy the book. You can get it on her website or on Amazon. For now, enjoy the episode. Isra, great to see you.
Yeah, it's been a while since we met in person.
2020 in New York. A lunch was organized by Summit at Sea Group, wasn't it?
Yes.
And by NAS.
Yeah. At Pastis, I think, in Chelsea.
Just before the pandemic.
Right before the pandemic, I think, January.
Going back to that. So it's been it's 5 years.
5 years, yeah.
Right. So obviously a lot's happened.
Mm-hmm.
We're here at South by Southwest in this incredible melting pot of serendipity.
Yeah.
And I just happened to be walking along the corridor. I saw you. I went, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And then I saw your book and I've put two and two together and thought, wow. So I came up to you yesterday, said hi.
Yeah.
Here we are.
I know. I'm excited to chat with you.
Let's just dive in. So tell me all about toxic productivity.
Gosh. So Toxic Productivity, which is the title of my book, it came out in November last year. And I wrote it over the span of 2.5 years. And it's essentially an exploration of the mindset that so many of us have, which is the relentless pursuit of achievement and outcomes as a way to feel good about ourselves. And so using productivity as a coping tool to avoid difficult emotions like guilt or shame, feeling left behind in life, all of those things that push us to do more, most of the time without intention or a disconnect from purpose. So the book explores that and offers an alternative to how we can actually build healthy productivity so that we don't burn out.
Okay. So what's the genesis of the book? Was it a personal journey or a personal experience?
It was definitely my own experience, my own struggle with utilizing achievement to feel a sense of connection and belonging, but also like a curiosity about the research that exists, because a lot of the personal development and self-growth books, they focus very heavily on behaviors. Mm-hmm. Change your habits, change your behaviors, create these life hacks or systems, and you'll be more productive and you'll be happier. And while that's true to a certain degree, what is more long-lasting is emotional management. And I felt that that was really missing from the discourse at large, that in order to be more productive and healthier and balanced, we actually need to know how to manage unresolved emotions so we don't use productivity as a coping for the emotions that we don't like. So it was my own experience, but it was also that like research that I felt was missing in like the direct-to-consumer personal development books.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how did you validate that this personal experience was something that other people encountered and feel and felt?
I mean, I think that, you know, a really good pulse of what people are feeling is cultural essays in magazines. Mm-hmm. So I read a lot. I mean, even if you like just do a quick Google search on burnout, you're going to get so much content from all kinds of magazines, whether they're business or their lifestyle or their pop culture, you can see that there is this thread that, you know, people are feeling a little bit of disconnection and burnout. And then, of course, there is validated data that is out there. Like the WHO in 2019 said that burnout is like a legitimate condition that people can experience. So like there is like cultural data, and then there's also cultural markers that made me realize that I'm not the only one, but also in just talking to people. I'm a therapist too, so I have a lot of clients who feel the same way.
Yeah, so that's where you obviously we're getting a lot of feedback.
Yeah.
And sense of it. So what's the reception been like?
It's been really good. I think people really resonate with the topic. I think what has been very good and worked really well is that it's not, the book is not just about work. It's about how does this mindset impact your romantic relationships, your friendships, you as a parent, and your self-concept. So in that way, it can reach a broader audience because it's not just about work. You can definitely apply it to leadership and workplace, but you can also take it into your own life. So in for that reason, it has been very applicable to a broad range of people.
I mean, I'd like to also talk about, everyone's talking here about AI, obviously, and AI has a massive, will have a massive impact on your area of expertise. Before we get to that, though, presumably the must that we talk about the cultural sort of aspect of productivity and toxic nature of it. How do you envisage this potentially having an impact on education as education evolves and the pressure put on children to perform? Because it's in a way it's instilled in you in an early age. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people on the podcast over the years. They come from very different cultural backgrounds. And often, if they come from, let's say, an Indian background or immigrants, the pressure on the children to perform and reach certain levels of performance is massive. And that must have an ongoing psychological effect for a lifetime. And it must be. So how do you break out of that cycle?
You know, your foundational experiences when you're a child have a huge impact on the way you connect and relate to yourself and others. But it's not your destiny. We get to make choices as adults that align with our own values. So one of the ways to kind of break out of this, you know, conditioning that I even grew up with is to do the like the curiosity-based work on yourself and understanding what your values are. When you are raised in an environment that is constantly telling you what you have to do in order to matter, then you never understand what your own values are. And so you mindlessly work towards achievements and milestones, whether that's professional, whether it's the kind of person you marry, whether it's the kind of career you pursue, where you live, all of that is predetermined for you, right? And so you have to make the conscientious choice to learn about your own values. And once you can do this value exploration and understand like what your 3-4 core values are, then you can start to make decisions that align and reflect your values. And that's what helps you break out of toxic productivity. Because the opposite of toxic productivity is not anti-productivity. It's value-based productivity. So it's healthier. Yeah.
It's really interesting. You say you've got to start with your values. Since I interviewed you originally for the podcast, which I think was around probably 2020, 2021, I've evolved it to ask three questions, people. One is, who are you as a human being? Who or what made you the human you are? And what are you working to achieve before you shuffle off this mortal coil? So you're really framing and putting pressure on people right in the beginning of the interview to do a self-reflection. Not many people can answer who they are as a human.
Yeah.
And in the very essence of it are your values.
Yes, absolutely.
What you've got there is something really interesting. So so I'm really looking forward to reading the book and diving deeper into that. So, given that we're now in this rapidly accelerating environment that's affecting all aspects of life, culture, society, with the impact of AI, which is causing not just a rapid mind shift in how we have to think about our lives and our future roles, creating in many people a bit of an existential crisis around how am I going to perform and what am I going to do when I've been conditioned. This is what I do. This is how I work. This is how I perform. How does that intersect with the book you've written? And What advice, I suppose, would you have for people maybe struggling with, you know, what the future might be for them?
Just in terms of AI?
Yeah, and how, because as before we started recording, you talked about productivity and at the intersection of AI, yeah. It's putting a lot of pressure mm-hmm. on certainly leadership or just seeing it as a way to increase the productivity, yep. reduce their costs, and guess what happens to be thrown along the wayside? Human capital.
Yeah.
So
the fear of being redundant in the workplace, yeah. So I think that, you know, I am like always very open-minded to changing, you know, environments because you can't resist change. But I think we have learned through the intersection of, let's say, healthcare and technology that it requires a lot of regulation.
Yes.
And so I would say the same thing with AI and productivity metrics in any industry. Requires a lot of guardrails that, because it's such an early field, it doesn't exist right now. But as we build systems for it, I think we have to like be aware of building in guardrails as well. And I think that AI can be used to remove some of the busy work that we do that makes us feel productive, but it's not value-based, so that we can actually redirect more energy towards value-based work. And so I think like using AI to streamline is a better way that can help you be more productive as opposed to using it to replace the values-based work. And I think that, you know, different people, different stakeholders in this, you know, AI background, they have different agendas. There are some people who are driven to reduce human capital. And if that's your goal as an agency or a person or like, you know, then you can do that because AI can do that. So I think like we need more players in the game who are more focused on leveraging AI to improve and enhance human connection and human productivity as opposed to the ones who are only focused on replacing it. So we need to have a diversity of the people who actually are in that industry, and the intention that they have needs to be diverse. Yes.
Do you think metrics for productivity are going to change depending on industry?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I know it's early stage and I think here we're always in this almost petri dish of experimentation where you go back to the real world and still people or organizations still don't have a policy or have a strategy for implementing. And if they do, it is very much cutting. Where can we drive most efficiency and cost cutting? But I suppose as we start to see, and I've seen a couple of talks, I've just talked about the rising water level and how it pushes, will force us into higher order human functions. So as we have to start to unleash our innate curiosity, our creativity and our imagination in ways to actually do higher order work, arguably it could make us feel more fulfilled as humans rather than less valued, which presumably then if productivity is more about our innate uniqueness, our unique characteristics, and that are allowed to flourish.
Amen.
Presumably that would be a good thing.
Yeah, it would be. I just want to say that any kind of shift, any cultural shift has a loss associated with it. And I would love for the leaders in this industry to try to mitigate the loss and stay more value-driven as much as possible. You know, I often think about the advent of the car engines, right? That completely demolished the horse-drawn carriage industry. Lots of people lost their jobs. There was a whole infrastructure around horse-drawn carriages that had to be completely demolished in order to make space for cars, right? And I feel like we're at that kind of pivot. And so, yes, there will be a lot of shifts, but I want us to just be more intentional about mitigating as much risk as possible. I think a lot of times leaders in the industry, and you're seeing this right now, are very cavalier about the risk. They're very cavalier about, you know what, let's just slash these jobs and put in robots or AI to do it. And can we actually mitigate some risk? I think that would be, and that's a really interesting challenge that it requires creative thinking. And I don't know if everyone's doing that. And I mean, I'm in the healthcare space, so I'm seeing the implementation of AI in mental health mm-hmm. as a very interesting thing. because there's companies that are building AI-based therapists. Like if you go into certain social media platforms, you can actually find AI-based therapists who are built into their messaging.
Oh, well, I can see, you know, even if you look at the latest release of Grok, Elon Musk's AI, they've got personas in there, and there's the therapist persona.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of risk associated with that. However, there's a lot of beneficial use cases for AI in mental health as well, like for QA, QI, you know, of treatment plans, of really like targeted treatment recommendations based on the individual's presenting problem, supporting and training early career clinicians through, you know, the treatment planning and symptom identification. Like, there's a lot of benefit, but I think we're just kind of jumping to the most obvious, like, here's like a bot therapist, right? To me, that's like the least creative use of this technology.
Do you think the likes, obviously, the industry is regulated, highly regulated with HIPAA compliance. Obviously, even if anyone's not familiar with the USA, if you're a therapist in New York, you're not licensed to be a therapist in California or in Texas. So where do you think the industry is, or the regulatory bodies are, in terms of starting to put in place some form of guidance or governance around the rollout of this? As you say, the linear thought is bot therapist.
Yeah.
But there's much more. And are you seeing any examples of either clients, organizations, clinicians that are racing ahead and others that are maybe being held back? And there's a disparity between the adoption of the technology?
Yeah, I think there's like definitely a huge disparity in the adoption. I think the, you know, the singular private practices or the group practices that are not that tech enabled are definitely not quick to adopt this. They're a little more cautious. And then you've got the more venture backed startup digital health spaces that are quickly adopting this. And
the likes of these Better Health and like,
and yeah, and some people are just slapping on AI as a way to say they also do it, but like, what are they really doing? So the regulation has not caught up, though, I will say that. And there's a lot of like interesting loopholes that people kind of find. So like, even like what you're talking about, these bot therapists, even though they say like, because what I experienced in that messaging platform was like, you know, a narcissism therapist was the persona. But there's a fine print on the bottom that says this is not a therapist. Mm. But they advertise as if they are. But like deep in the fine print is like, so there's ways people are like kind of skipping over that. But I'm not saying that's a good thing, by the way. I was very unsettled by that whole experience because, you know, AI is built on data. Data has an inherent bias in it. And so it's not necessarily a safe environment for somebody who is struggling with mental health. AI-based mental health services can be very scary for people who have psychosis or who have very severe mental health conditions because they can't tell the difference between reality and not. So we have to work very cautiously, but the regulation is not there yet.
Okay. So a personal question.
Yeah.
It started out, obviously, as self-reflection. You've written the book. You're having success with it. People are resonating with it. How has it affected your own sense of productivity? And how is it that journey you've been on? How would you describe it now, today?
I am definitely so much more aware of where I put my time and energy now than I did when I was in my 20s and early 30s. Like, I have so much more discrimination about where my energy is going. And interestingly, that has brought me so much more better outcome than just casting a wide net, doing everything, not saying no, saying yes, just kind of like having no boundaries and limitations, I think kept me in a state of just under what I wanted. And when I, you know, you trim the fat, you refocus your energy, you reprioritize. That requires you to be value-based. It requires you to say no, even when you have the fear of missing out. It requires you to, you know, be more collaborative or be very discerning about who you're collaborating with. Like, it just requires so much more intention. And that has actually given me outcomes that are so much more connected to the things that I genuinely really want to do. So I would say that this journey has made me more, like, productive in a healthier way. in a more streamlined and targeted way. Whereas prior, I was just busy all the time. Yeah.
Mm-mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So if people want to get the book, no, not here at South By.
Yeah.
Amazon on?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I think it's on Target and Walmart as well. And then always check out your indie bookshop.
And also the audio version?
Yeah, there is a, I think it's on Kindle and Audible.
And are you reading it?
I am narrating it.
It's been really hard.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
I loved it. I had to audition. I did 3 auditions to be the narrator. And I got it at the end, and it was like 2 days in a studio. It was really fun.
No.
Yeah, I had a really great time.
Yeah. Well, you obviously went through a sort of productivity curve to got the maybe that's your next phase of your career.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I'm excited about what's going to come.
So what comes next?
Well, right now I am just kind of thinking through a couple of different ideas about where I really want to put my time, because writing a book is very involved. So I want to kind of like really see what I would like to dedicate the next 2 years in terms of writing. And then I am also working at a digital health company for Asian Americans. It's a therapy, coaching, blended, tech-enabled service called Anise Health. Yeah, and I do clinical strategy and operations because I'm very passionate about BIPOC mental health services.
Okay, and then are you still available for like hire for doing speaking gigs or?
Gosh, yes, thank you for asking. That is something that I hope to do more of, and I've done a lot this year already. But conferences, I do a lot of corporate speaking for keynotes, and then also very focused like workshops and seminars. So for ERGs at corporates, for management training on emotionally intelligent leadership, and how to kind of like bring this message of healthy productivity to the workplace, I think has been an enormously fun part of my job so far. And I will be doing more of that, and I hope to.
Because I think that I've got a friend in London, and we've been speaking a lot. She used to be head of for a large agency network in Asia, Omnicom.
Oh, right.
And she was head of talent. And she's now trying to work out what she's going to do now she's back in London about the rest of her career. And one of the things and I've been coaching her on AI, I've been doing a lot of that myself. And she's come to the realization that employee engagement is a massive area of opportunity in the coming years, especially as organizations start to adopt AI in different facets. And I suppose that what you're doing, talking about healthy productivity, is an essential part of ensuring people you have good employee engagement and have purpose in their life. So I might connect you with her just in this conversation.
But
if organizations that are acutely aware of the fear that a lot of people are feeling, and this is quite visceral at the moment. It's not being, it hangs under the surface. I think good leaders are aware. If they want to reach out to you, they'd be a perfect person to come in to them and guide them through a framework for bringing about healthy products.
Yeah.
How do they reach out to you?
The best way to reach out to me is on my website. It's my full name, isranasser.com. Or if you just look up toxic productivity, I usually show up. There's a contact form there. You can send me a message. And I do think that, you know, anytime there's a flux in society, and leaders are not just leaders by title, right? Like anybody can be a leader in their organization if they embody the values and the core of supporting their peers. And it really does require leaders to rise up and set the stage for certainty in a very uncertain world.
It's a great way to finish it. And that was something, what you just said there was something that was echoed by that last talk I was in with Ian Beecroft. Mm-hmm. Very much about leaders. It's not about roles and responsibilities now. It's about people who step forward.
Yeah.
So I think, I'm looking forward to hearing the next phase of your journey.
Thank you.
So it's fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for chatting with me. This was so lovely.
And enjoy the rest of South by Southwest.
Thanks, you too.
Cool.
Awesome.
Right. Okay, that's all for now, folks. Now here's my ask of you. Please follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or whatever player you use. Also, please subscribe to our new Random Collisions newsletter. We really are working to build a global community of action takers, action engines of people that really care about the problems that need solving. Thank you very much, and see you next time.